Hey, resilient recruiters, here's reason number two why you must attend the Recruitment Coach Live Summit in London this September. And that is the keynote presentations. You'll gain exclusive insights from other top billing recruiters and entrepreneurs who've either scaled their own desk or built multi-seven-figure businesses. I myself will, of course, be one of the speakers, but the presentations that I am the most excited about are not professional speakers and trainers, but other recruitment business owners like you who will be unpacking their most effective tactics and strategies. No theory, just practical insights from people who are in the trenches, ordinary people achieving extraordinary results. There's still time to take advantage of the early bird pricing. By the way, it's happening on September 17th and 18th. So don't miss out. Reserve your place now at recruitmentcoach.com/summit. Welcome to the Resilient Recruiter Podcast. This is your host, Mark Whitby. Today, I'm joined by Zach Maynor. Zach is a director at Iris Recruiting Solutions based in Carmel, Indiana. He specializes in placing traveling superintendents with general contractors throughout the United States. Normally, I interview business owners on the show, but I invited Zach because he has such an awesome story. He's only been in the recruiting industry for 6 years, and this year he has absolutely taken off like a rocket with a four-month stretch billing an average of 100K per month. Zach, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Hey, thanks for having me, man. Really, really appreciate it. Excited about the conversation today.
All right, brilliant. So first of all, you were introduced to me by David Reed.
Yes.
Who I've known for probably 20 years. How do you know David?
David entered my life probably about four years ago. I was a recruiter at a firm in Michigan, actually, at the time. And he came in as the director of professional recruiting. I was a professional recruiter at that firm. And right away, I could just tell that he was a great servant leader. And he bought into what I was doing at the company and really helped train me and you know, springboard me into where I'm in today. So
amazing. Yeah. So it's a quick story about David. I hope he listens to this actually, because I've got a lot of affection for that guy. He's one of the best salesmen I've ever met. And
it is insane.
He sold something like hundreds of millions of dollars worth of staffing services, especially in the insurance and banking industries. And he's been on loads of my training, like, as I say, like as long as 20 years ago. I delivered a workshop. It was like a 2-day workshop for the company that he was the sales director at, called Recruitment Zone, based in Edinburgh. And it was Secrets of Selling Routine Search or something I called it. And typically in any group, like there's always, especially if the people haven't chosen to be here, they're told like you're going to this training, right? So you get some people who are like really up for it and they're enthusiastic. And you get other people who are kind of like they don't want any part of it, right? And then most people are sort of in between, like they're open, but they're waiting to see what you're going to do, yeah. Right? And David is one of those people who he instantly, like the light bulb went off and he instantly understood the importance of this. And he went out immediately, like the week after the course, he went out and won something like $50,000 worth of retained, you know, search. And the rest of the team was just going, what just happened? That guy just, anyway, so he's a great guy. I'm glad that he introduced us.
Oh yeah. I've been on multiple sales calls with him and, you know, kind of just sit there in awe on how he gets people across the table just eating out of his hand. It was an amazing experience working under him, and really appreciate his mentorship. Even now, we still talk, you know, probably every 2-3 weeks, you know, via text, and, you know, he checks in on me, how I'm doing. Yeah. He lets me know how he's doing. And he actually introduced me to a few people in the, I guess, recruiting world, Plowman. Is it Plowman? I believe it's Plowman.
Plowman Ivanov. Yep.
Yeah. I've connected with him. We've talked, you know, retainers. He wanted to hear what my approach was on securing retainers. And so, yeah, he's just been a great mentor for me. Always connects me with the right people.
All right. Fantastic. So, tell me then what motivated you to reach out to me?
You know, I saw your, I'm a podcast listener, right? So I have listened to a lot of your podcasts, Rich Rosen, Jordan Raboy, Greg Savage, obviously, Plowman Ivanov. And I was able to use some of the tips and tricks, you know, with Jordan, it was the planning, Plowman, obviously the retaining, retainers. And then I believe Rich Rosen was more about, you know, how to just run your day-to-day, being specific in what you work on. Don't work on junk. Don't work on stuff that's outside of your industry. And really took that to heart and dug in and decided that, you know, I need to work on my business and in my business kind of at the same time. So listening to your podcast, I was working on my business and I was able to translate that while working in my business and was able to put up some pretty large billing numbers because of that.
That's awesome, man. That's really cool. And so like how much of a difference between like last year? Now, of course, we have to acknowledge last year was like crazy for everybody. That was pandemic. And now, you know, there's pent up demand. So I'm sure that that didn't hurt. But
so
what was the biggest difference for you between last year and this year?
Yeah. Last year, traveling superintendent division is the division I run in my recruiting firm. Obviously with COVID, traveling really shut down everywhere. So biggest difference for me between last year and this year is last year, my conversations were based around having, you know, calling decision makers, asking them what they're seeing in the market, letting them know, hey, I've talked to five or six of your competitors' CEOs. Do you want information on what they're telling me? And really just made myself apparent in the market when no one else was really making the recruiting calls, making the marketing calls. Just started, you know, just expanding my relationship, just planting that seed. So when the faucet did turn back on, I was ready to rock and roll. Last year, I only billed around 240,000 last year. Tough year, definitely a down year for me.
Hey, listen, year, that's good for a pandemic year. That's, I think most people,
yeah, especially with traveling. Yeah. traveling literally in the people you replace job title. So yeah, it was tough, but I am proud of what I was able to accomplish.
Awesome. And then how does that contrast with your performance this year?
This year I'm sitting at 585,000 for the year.
Fantastic.
And we've got, two final interviews today. Both are $30,000 placement fees. So fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed, those two, man. And you've still got one quarter to go. So yeah, that's phenomenal. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, super impressed with that. So you highlighted a few of the things that you learned or were inspired by on the show. What specifically did you do to implement? Because, and this is, I think this is what really impressed me about you is that, like, I get lots of messages from people saying they really enjoy the show. They get ideas, they get inspiration. But you came to me and said, I am implementing the stuff I'm learning and I'm actually getting results from it. And I was super impressed with that. Like, could you elaborate on some of the things that you're doing differently now?
Yeah. So planning's huge. You know, I used to just come to work and, you know, whatever hit my desk at the time I would work on, you know, after listening to Jordan Raboy, and we actually, we're part of a training program. So I know who Jordan Raboy is. I've watched his videos and then listening to him on your podcast kind of, you know, solidified like, okay, maybe I should start really digging in and listening and implementing some of these things. But for him, it was the planning aspect. And then with some of the other Rich Rosen, it was, you know, being specific in what you're working on each day. Don't deviate from traveling superintendents. So for me, you know, I was able to tell some clients, no, I'm not. I can't work on your project manager opportunity. I can't work on your estimator opportunity. I'm a traveling superintendent recruiter. So in planning and then staying laser focused on traveling superintendents, I was able to start making more placements more often. I was able to start leveraging my candidates' activity. Meaning, hey, I send a candidate to five or six different places. I got four or five people wanting to interview this candidate, and then just letting the clients know, hey, this guy's got interviews set up with other clients. If you want him, you're going to have to move very, very quickly, and kind of organically it drove up their price. It sped up the interview processes, and it's happened all throughout the year. So when you're laser focused, you can actually create demand for your candidate. Which I've been able to do. So making more placements this year, putting up pretty large billing numbers has really flipped a switch on the confidence I have on the phone, and not working on junk job orders or not working with a candidate who's 50-50 on whether or not they're gonna make a change. I've really dug into getting to the no faster. Are you in or are you out? Because if you're out, I got other people to find, other candidates to find to get in front of my clients. And then on the client side of things, like, hey, this is how I work. Are you in or are you out? Because if I'm having to continuously follow up with you to get feedback, or you're not moving quickly enough, this relationship's not going to work. I've got the blueprint on how to hire traveling superintendents effectively. I've placed, I think it's 43 traveling superintendents this year. So if you listen to me, if you want to buy into my process, you will have a traveling superintendent, on your staff within the next 2 weeks after they put their notice in. So it's really helped me on my confidence too. I'm handling objections better on the phone. I'm handling negotiations better. I don't go below 25% anymore. Like, nope. I'm not doing it. Well, every other recruiter we have is at 20%. All right. Well, what I'll do is I'll send you my candidate. They're at 25%. And if they're worth 25%, you'll pay me 25%. And your 20% recruiters, they can just keep throwing crap at the wall all day, but you're going to interview my guy. And when you say that to a business owner, they respect it. They're like, you know what, Zach? I like that. I'm going to work with you. Let's see what you got.
Awesome. Hey, by the way, dude, your notes that you sent me are among the best that anybody has sent me. You've got a lot of preparation and detail into this. So I love the statement you made, confidence changes everything. You're so right. Like, it's a virtuous cycle. In the same way as there's a vicious cycle, right? If your confidence gets knocked, that affects the quality and the quantity of your activities, which then your results continue to diminish. And then that's a bad place to be. What you're describing is a virtuous cycle. Success leads to more success. And the more confident you are, people respond differently to you as well. And, it just, things happen for you in the way you describe. So I love what you're saying. Talk to me more about, You've made 40 plus placements already this year, and you've got this kind of very no nonsense attitude. Like, this is how I work. Are you in or are you out? This is my fee. But you're also confident in your method, your process, and your ability to deliver as well, which I think must definitely come across in your tone of voice and everything. What else have you now? The other thing you mentioned to me that you're doing differently is retainers, because that must be quite unusual in this industry.
It is. It's not as tough of a sell as I thought it would be.
Okay.
I create so much demand for my candidates.
Yeah.
My clients would get to a point where, Zach, you're sending me great candidates, but I can never hire them. Well, you're not moving quickly enough, client. you got to step your game up. Well, what can I do to, you know, they're actually coming to me. What can I do to have exclusivity on this candidate? Well, you can give me $5,000 up front, and you'll have first right of refusal. Is that something, you know, is that something you want to pursue? Right. Well, yeah, because I want an actual shot at these guys. I'm tired of one of my competitors hiring this guy, or hiring all the guys you send me. So it's really just about creating that demand. And the way you create that demand is the level of candidate you send. I don't send junk candidates. All my candidates have great longevity, have great project backgrounds, are ready to make a move. So when it comes to offer time, I also lock candidates down exclusively. Like, hey, if you work with me, give me a week. I'll put opportunities in front of you that you're gonna want to interview for. Story from yesterday. One of my new recruiters, he's only been here 3 weeks, sent me a candidate. His name's Dave. Shout out to Dave. sent me a candidate, really good multifamily traveling superintendent. Extremely frustrated with where he was. I got him on the phone. Talk through everything with him and, you know, ask him, hey, what other interviews do you have going on right now? He's like, well, I got a couple. I was like, well, can you please stop taking recruiting calls and stop interviewing, or stop taking recruiting calls and stop, applying to positions, mm-hmm. you know, on your own. Let me take over. Let me show you what I can do for you in the next week. Mm-hmm. He said, okay, Zach, I'll give you a week. We'll see what happens. I think I called him maybe 15 minutes later with an interview set up with one of my clients. They interviewed him yesterday, and then he's got a final interview with the vice president today. And I created the demand by letting the client know, hey, he's got a couple other interviews set up. Now, I've had placements with this client, so she knows if I say that it's true and they need to move quickly. And the candidate calls me. He's like, Zach, it was a great call. I absolutely love this opportunity. They want to talk to me tomorrow. He's like, I am so excited about this. And I'm so excited that I hitched my wagon to you, because what you said, you told me you'd have something set up for me. And within 24 or 48 hours, I'm pretty confident I'm going to have an offer from these guys. So, you know, I don't always throw that out there to candidates unless I know for a fact. I've got, you know, I knew my client was going to like this guy. And I knew he was going to like them. So, you know, you can get a little, I don't want to say cocky. Cocky is not the right word, but just throw yourself out there. Like, hey, I've got an opportunity. They're going to like you. If you do well, they will hire you. Let me work with you exclusively. Or work exclusively with me. Let me show you what I can do. And then I'm able to back that up.
Awesome. Do you know, it's so, it's such an underutilized approach. And I believe in working in a partnership sort of way with both clients and candidates, where there's cooperation, there's good communication, and there is mutual commitment. And mm-hmm. A lot of recruiters are familiar with the idea of client exclusivity and why you would want that. And they focus on the client side and they forget the importance of candidate exclusivity. And I feel like this is more relevant now than ever before, because of the way the market is, that if you have the candidate, if you have a really placeable candidate, then, you know, you're going to place him or her. But the challenge, apart from counteroffers, is a big thing right now, which we can talk about. But the other is just competing offers. You know, they're getting multiple offers, and so there's you can put all this work in, and then, you know, the deal falls apart at the last minute. So getting that exclusivity is key, and I love the way that you present that to the candidate, and it just is logical, and you put a time limit on it. So I mean, it sounds totally reasonable. Why wouldn't someone do that if you're going to be representing them and putting effort in and bringing them opportunities? Why wouldn't they give you a window of time in which to do your thing?
Right. It's such a great feeling when you say it and then it comes to fruition. Hey, work with me. I will find something for you within the next, 24 to 48 hours. And when it happens, it just makes you feel good. And then, you know, you can go back to that guy on the back end that you placed and, hey, who's the best superintendent you know and that you've worked with? Give me their name. And they typically will, and you know, kind of just grow from word of mouth.
Snowballs. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So that's another great tip, is your referral strategy. We should talk about that. But first, you have a special name for your retainers. What do you call it again?
Yeah, and this is not from me. This is my company I work for. Okay. They call it a resource dedication fee. So we're set up extremely well at my company. I make money calls all day. I don't have to do any of my own research. I don't have to figure out who the decision maker is at a company, you know, find their email or phone number. We have a research team that does that for me. So when I go to pitch an RDF, clients right now are basically wanting it for exclusivity and first right of refusal on my candidates. Mm-hmm. But, you know, when they're like, you know, what does this do? Like, why am I giving you $5,000 up front? Well, I've got a research team that will, you're going to send me a list of all your competitors. I've got a research team that's going to go out and get all the superintendents from those competitors and put them into my system. And then I'm going to start calling them. And that takes time, you know, that's time and money. So you're giving me money up front so I can allocate that to a researcher and a recruiter to make these calls for you. And, you know, that's how we're able to get candidates in front of you as quickly as we can. So retainer, you know, kind of has a negative connotation.
Right.
But when you call a resource dedication fee, like, hey, I'm having to dedicate resources from my business to work on your stuff exclusively.
Yeah.
So you've got to pay me for that.
It's brilliant. It's just using a different terminology that has more meaning. You know, retainers, either they don't really understand what that means, or they might have a negative perception of it, right? But by calling it a resource dedication fee, then it almost, even just by the name, it starts to do some of the selling for you.
For sure. 100%. All right. 100%.
Fantastic. Interesting. So you, talk me through, like, what else, because it can't just be that simple. Like, okay, you're more confident. You're asking for your resource dedication fees. You're asking candidates to work with you exclusively. You're staying focused in your niche market and you're not deviating from that. What else do you think has contributed to your, you know, virtuous cycle this year, Zach?
I'm a very competitive guy. So like when I wake up every day, I'm up at 5 and I'm in the office by 6. Now I can work a flex schedule. I have a 2 almost 3-year-old daughter at home. So
amazing.
And I hate driving in traffic. Right. So I beat the traffic there and I beat the traffic home. But my mindset each day is, you know, I'm not going to get outworked today. So when I get to the office, it's, you know, light switch flips on and it's go time. So I'm highly, highly competitive. Another thing that I'm going to put myself out here on this one is I started actually paying my tithes to my church earlier this year.
Okay.
And, you know, they get 10% of everything I'm able to bring home. And that has really changed the level, level of conversations I'm having and everything like that. You know, one of my favorite Bible verses is "Those who give shall receive." Mm-hmm. It's a promise. It's you know, it's not those who give might receive. It's, you know, hey, if you give back to your church, you pay your tithes, you know, you're going to get some gifts in return, whether or not that's money or, you know, whatever. But that's played a huge factor as well.
Fantastic.
And, you know,
hey, can I just speak to that for a second? Because people will only work so hard to get more money, right? It's and once you've already, you're comfortable and you're making, you know, you've got a nice lifestyle, then, you know, having more of that doesn't necessarily, like, you're not going to work twice as hard to make, you know, more money. But if that has a different meaning for you if that success is about something bigger than you or that has more of a purpose, then I can see that being massively motivating.
Oh yeah, 100%. And, you know, going back to the confidence thing, mm-hmm. When you're more confident on your calls, it, you know, candidates and clients can tell that, okay, this guy knows what he's doing. This is someone I want to hitch my wagon to. Mm-hmm. You know, I just think of every sales call I get, every, you know, random number I get, I answer all of them. I love talking to those people because if they're good, I'll talk to them. I just think, all right, how am I going to get the person on the other end of the line? I just don't want to sound like another recruiter. I love handling objections. I don't want, you know, I tell my team all the time, like, don't just say okay and hang up. Like challenge them. Challenge I don't know, or everyone I know is working right now. Well, I hope that everyone you know is working right now in the specific industry, because it's literally the hottest job market in the world and there's so much demand. So actually that's who I'm looking for. I'm looking for the people who are working. No one's interested. No one I know is interested in traveling. How do you know that? How do you know that me putting an extra $20,000, $30,000 in their back pocket isn't going to be life-changing for them? Let them make that decision for themselves. Just give me a name. All I need is a name. And then not working on junk, just not being afraid to pull a candidate out of process just to get to the no quicker and move on to the next thing. Has really been effective for me too. Working on, you know, the more good things you're working on, the more money you make. So let's weed out the candidates that are iffy. Let's weed out the clients that don't get back with you. And let's spend 100% of our time working on things that are going to get across the finish line.
Talk to me more about get to the no faster. Where did you come up with this phrase?
I don't know. I just came up with it. I'm not sure where it came from, but you know, if a candidate's being wishy-washy, like, hey, client said it was a good interview. What are your thoughts? Hey, I thought it was great. Okay. Can you get me your references? Yeah, I'll get them to you. And you know, a day goes by. Hey, are you interested in this? Because if you were, you know, how I feel if I'm going on an interview for a new job and I really, really enjoyed it and they ask for references, it would be over. You know, I would have them emailed within 5 minutes. What's taking so long? What's going on here? Or are you feeling, you're not feeling it like you thought you were? Just getting to that no quicker helps you out in the end. If you're chasing someone in the beginning, you're going to be chasing them through the whole process.
Yep.
So let's get to that no as fast as possible.
Hey, Zach, I think this is really important. And I like the way you explain that, because recruiters are eternal optimists, and I think you have to be a positive person to be able to, you know, face the setbacks, the disappointments, the rejections every day. But at the same time, it's important not to delude yourself and, you know, hope that things are going to work out when deep down you have a feeling that there's some, you know, that something is not right, right? Whether it's with the client or with the candidate. Mm-hmm. And we typically waste a lot of time working the wrong jobs and with the wrong candidates. And you've actually made it a philosophy to try and cut that time out so that you can focus more time on the right candidates and the right jobs. So I think that's genius.
I actually had a situation, my other recruiter that works with me, his name's Reed. We had a candidate fly out for an interview, and they liked him and they offered him. And he flew out on a Friday. They offered him on Monday, and you know, we called to present the offer to him, and he wasn't 100% upfront with us on other interviews he had going on. He's like, "Well, I'm going to put this offer in my back pocket and see what the interview on Friday comes up with." And that doesn't fly with me. I was like, actually, we're just going to go ahead and pull you from process. If my client was the one, if you really enjoyed the conversation and wanted to work there, you'd accept and cancel the other interview. So I'm just going to go ahead and let them know that you're declining. and I'm going to pull you from process. And he was like, well, that's not what I said. And I was like, well, you did. You said it without saying it. So I'm just going to go ahead and pull you. That way I'm not worrying about it for the next week on whether or not who he's going with or not. Let's just get to the next interview, next candidate, figure out, you know, where the next placement's going to be. I think recruiters spend a lot of time, and, you know, I catch myself doing it too. I've got two final interviews today. I wonder how they're going to go. And you're just worrying about it. Like, my thought probably, like, hey, go hit the phones, go find, I don't care that the interview from today is from work we did yesterday or the week before.
Yep.
Let's focus on what we're doing today for tomorrow and next week. I don't care if you have five final interviews today and they all go through. Where's the new candidate from today?
Amazing. So you touched on this earlier, but I'd like to go deeper because I think this could be valuable. Talk to me about how your current company sets you up for success compared to previous organizations you are part of and the impact that's had on your performance.
Yeah. So I've worked for three total, I guess, recruiting firms. This is my current Irish Recruiting Solutions out of Carmel is the current firm I work for. The past two were more of a staffing-based, I guess, firm that had direct hire teams that would work on the perm placement side of things for like temp to hire clients, if that makes sense.
Yep.
So the first company I worked for was a large company. They've got about 100 offices all over the country. Do extremely well, $200 to $300 million a year in revenue. I had everything. I thought they gave me all the tools necessary to be successful. They had their own proprietary ATS system where you could literally just go in and put a search in and people would come up that you would be looking for. And then they also partnered with, you know, all the Indeeds of the world and LinkedIn's. And anytime someone applied, all you'd have to do is open up your ATS for the day and everything was just right there. So they were a great company. I had upward mobility there, but the financial piece wasn't there. And I didn't really have the autonomy to go out and do exactly what I wanted. The second place I worked was where I met David Reed, and they were more of a startup trying to figure out what needed to happen. I was so young in my recruiting career at the time, I didn't know what a good recruiting company looked like or what good processes looked like or anything like that. So all my time was just spent on LinkedIn. I was trying to hustle on LinkedIn like every other recruiter out there. Now at Iris, I'm in a place where they basically say, Zach, you are running your own business within the framework of our business. Mm-hmm. You can make your own business decisions on who you want to work with, what clients you want to work with, what fees you get, you know, guarantees you give, everything like that. It's more of a mindset from their standpoint. Like, I see them as my investors. Mm-hmm. Like, they're investing in me to go grow my business. And I just have to give them, I don't want to do payroll. I don't want to have to worry about insurance, the rent payment for the office, invoicing, accounting. I don't want to have to worry about that. So to me, I pay a premium, percentage of my commission to them, for them to take care of all that. And then on the flip side, they help me grow my business by helping me pay for new recruiters under me to get trained and everything like that. And then on up and above that, they have the processes set in place. Hey, Zach, this is how you become extremely successful here. We've got our team, our research team. We've got, a marketing team that sends out, you know, automatic emails, puts your call plans together. Almost like a plug and play. If you come in and you're extremely motivated to do well, they have the roadmap on how to do that here. And I'm making money calls all day long. And where before it was like, all right, who's a good competitor from this client that I can get out, you know, I can research on LinkedIn. Okay, I found the person, but I don't know their number. I guess I just have to shoot them a LinkedIn message. where now it's, I've got their email address, I've got their cell phone number, I've got their LinkedIn, we're touching them four or five different times. And we've just got the process in place. So I really see my two owners, and they're great, Chad and Bill. They're servant leaders. They're like, they remind me of David Reed. Servant leaders wanting me to, the more you succeed, the more we succeed. So we think you know how to succeed. You go out and do it, and then we'll coach you. If you have any questions along the way, we'll guide you. But this is your business to run within the framework of ours. Go out and make as much money as possible, as much placements as possible.
Fantastic. All right. I like it. And you've started hiring people in your team already. So talk to me about that, because being a billing manager, i.e. you're managing and you're making placements at the same time, is not easy to juggle. So talk to me about how you're approaching that.
Yeah. So when David Reed and I first started working together, he's like, "Hey Zach, you need to go follow this Greg Savage guy on LinkedIn." And I remember seeing one of his LinkedIn posts was, "Top billers in your company are not always the best billing managers or sales managers."
That's true.
And I take that as a challenge. all right, if I'm going to bill at a high level, and I'm going to manage a team, I want to be the best at doing that. So I got to a point in April, May of this year where I was ready to bring on a recruiter to help me support my clients. So I brought on Reed. He was 1 year out of college, extremely green. Just said, "Reed, if you buy into this, you're going to do extremely well here. There's opportunity. You have an opportunity to be an account executive one day. Me, I'll teach you how to get there." He came in and he billed, I think he's over $200,000, and he started in May of this year.
Wow, that's phenomenal.
So he's just absolutely dominating. And I've told him, I don't like managing. I really don't. I don't like keeping an eye on people or anything like that. So I've kind of moved from that management approach to more of the player coach approach. I just remember I played football in high school, mm-hmm. and, you know, we watched game film. My coaches would, they would yell at me. I'm not yelling at Reed, but it's just like, "Hey Reed, you did this way. Why don't you try it this way and see if it works?" So we listened to, call recordings.
Yeah.
So we can, that's our game film, and we can, really hone in on, specific ways to position yourself on calls and in specific situations. So it's really been more of a coaching role for me and a motivator, more than a management role. If I look back and all the great managers I've had, my current president and vice president, great mentors, David Reed, great mentor, first company, really couple great mentors there. I want to emulate what they've done, been able to do for me. And it's really just servant leadership. "Hey, I'm here for you. I want you to succeed. What do you need from me? This is how I run my desk. It's successful. If you do what I do, you're going to be successful, but I also got to give them the autonomy to go figure things out on their own. Figure out new ways, more creative ways of doing things." But yeah, Reed's been an absolute blessing for me, coming in and dominating like he has. And then that's allowed me to bring on another guy. So I hired an old colleague of mine. He's in his third week, and he's got a $30,000 final interview today. So same thing there, just coaching him up on, "Hey, you can be good at this. You can be extremely good at this. Just follow my lead. If I hear something that you're doing wrong, I'm going to coach you on it, and just keep getting better every day, and we'll get to you to where you want to be financially."
Love it. So what's the structure then? Are they recruiting on your orders? And then
yes. Yeah. So you come in our company, you come in as a we used to call her project coordinator, yep. but we called her recruiter now, project coordinator slash recruiter. And basically I set up your day. Hey, I've got, here's information on the client. Here's information on the position. Here's what they're paying. Here's a call plan of 75 superintendents that work for companies that have the same types of projects that our client does. Here's the email that's going out. Here's the call plan. Here's the follow-up email. Bring them to me. And bring me any good candidates. You open, I'll close. So that's where we're at right now with both of them. Mm-hmm. But eventually they'll get to a point and be able to grow into an account manager mm-hmm. where they're doing their own business development. And how you make that jump mm-hmm. is that you've perfected the recruiting side of things.
Got it.
You can obviously have a call, you know, do an interview, get all the information you need from the interview. You can do interview feedback. You can write up a submittal for me. You can handle all of the recruiting aspects. Once you get that part locked in, mm-hmm. we start letting you take your candidates that you find and going out and finding your own clients with those candidates. And then after you bill a certain amount as an account manager, you make the jump up into an account executive where you're running a full desk at that point.
Amazing. All right. I get it. That makes sense. So listen, what, where do you go from here, Zach?
Yeah. My goal this year is, 800,000. Mm-hmm. I could hit it, could not, I don't know, but, next year goal's a million, probably need maybe one more, I could probably hit a million with the team I have. Mm-hmm. Ultimate goal over the next 2 years is to be, I believe it's a $2.2 million biller. If I'm a $2.2 million biller, IW to $1 million. And that's my ultimate goal.
Amazing. So I love that you know the exact amount for, that and the time frame for that as well. So you must spend time like really thinking about your goals. Can you tell me about that process?
I've just got a spreadsheet mm-hmm. that I have all my placements on, so I can see where I'm at financially. Everyone in the that's one of the cool things about our company. We kind of work on a draw mm-hmm. slash quota basis, mm-hmm. so all the account executives know how much everyone makes just based on the amount of cash in they have. Yeah. So I just keep an eye on that. And, I'm always hearing, $1 million biller, $1 million biller, those are the cream of the crop in the recruiting industry. So obviously want to hit that, but then, I got to think, okay, if I bill a million, I'll make X amount. Mm-hmm. What do I need to build to W to a million? Cause I think that'd be a really cool thing to do.
That would be cool.
So that's just that's the goal. What did it take to get to the point I'm at now? And how do I scale to get to that next level is really where I'm at now. So I'm actually putting together, I listened to your podcast that just published earlier this week on putting a playbook together and training. And that's the next thing I'm going to implement from listening to your podcast is making sure that we have a playbook. We have my team has our core values. And that we're always sharpening the saw for training. And if we continue doing that, add a few more people, I'll be at that $2 million billing mark, hopefully within the next 2 years.
Love it. All right, Zach. Well, look, let's do this again, like in another year, and you can update us on what's happening.
Absolutely.
And the new strides you've made. So that was fun. I enjoyed catching up with you, Zach. Thanks so much for doing this.
Yeah, it was a pleasure, Mark. Really enjoyed it.